Mike, what's happening?
Zach, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. I know a scare last night with Anthony Davis, but it seems like all is okay and Anthony Davis is expected to play tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, right? We spoke to Darvin Ham at about 3 o'clock today, and obviously the first question, right, what do you know about AD? And he said he's not in protocols, he's feeling much better. So, of course, they're going to wait for that final word to see to make sure that he's good to go tomorrow as the game approaches. But that probable tag certainly tells you a lot. And, you know, I think just that is the whole key, right? Like, without Anthony Davis, it's just a entirely different team. He is not only the key defensively, but he's the first part of the scouting report on the other side of the court as well. And I think that's what people don't realize. That's been the shift this year from years past where LeBron occupies that top spot for most coaches, and that's been the difference. AD has been doing it on both ends, and so the Lakers, that completely changes the outlook of the game for them.
If he's on the court tomorrow night, full go, that there won't be any restrictions or anything to really watch for with him, you would imagine?
No, yeah, exactly. Yep, you said it, Zach.
Mike Trudell here with us. When you look back at the game from last night, hey, I was expecting the Warriors were going to win that one, but what was kind of the vibe around that team? Because once you lose that game up 3-1 and it gets to 3-2, then everyone starts talking about the time when LeBron was down 3-1 to the Warriors and came on back, and now it's trying to happen from the reverse way.
Yeah, you know, that I get it, right? That in what NBA history has told us, though, is that, like, when the team is up 3-1, and if it's a road team, sometimes you are going to drop that game 5 if it's against a good team. And Golden State absolutely is a good team. Like, they're good enough where they could still win the title this year. They won the title last year. It's such a difficult thing to play against them because of how much they can spread you out. And with Steph Curry, I do think that Davis is the best possible answer for a defensive big, and that's why the Lakers have won these 3 games in the series. But, you know, in terms of what's like the whole back and forth of the NBA series, I was lucky enough to follow the Kobe Bryant years, the 2008 to 2009, and those back-to-back titles. And, you know, that team, as great as they were, would often lose one of those games when they had the chance to close out. It's the rhythm of a postseason where the other team counters after you win, and Golden State's been able to do that twice now. But this is all set up for the Lakers to go home for game 6. They've yet to lose in their building, and they're the team that I think should have some of the adjustments in their favor heading into this one, Zach.
Yeah, it's so funny now how people talk about LeBron James, Mike Trudell, because we kind of seen a different LeBron now this year where he doesn't have to go score 40, 45 points for the team to win. With the role that he's playing this year, just kind of give us the outlook and the view of LeBron from this season.
Yeah, so the way I would frame it like this. So first of all, there's only one other player in NBA history that he's even played meaningful postseason minutes in year 20, and that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And the ask on Kareem that year in his 20th season was nowhere near as significant as the ask on LeBron is. And I think when you watch him, sometimes he is still the best player in the world on a given night. You're just not necessarily going to get that 7 times out of 7 games in a playoff series. But can you get it 4 times? So can you get it even 3 times or 2 and then have a player like AD or whoever else step up, right? It was Lonnie Walker IV that helped him get the win in game 4. But for me, watching LeBron approach these games, he's like, how do I help this team get to 4 wins? Is it by me playing a primary role on a given night? Is it by me playing a supportive role on a given night? And I think that he saves the sort of desperation LeBron primary takeover role for games like this, for games like game 6, when the Lakers do not want to go back to Golden State for game 7. So my expectation of LeBron is that he raises up an additional level from what you saw in game 5. And I don't think that's by accident. I think that's a player that has been through many, many, many playoff games. In fact, more than anybody else in NBA history, right? Like, this is a guy, he has actually played more playoff basketball than any player in the NBA.
And that's why I started the show tonight saying, even though there was uncertainty right before we brought you on about Anthony Davis and now he is expected to play tomorrow night, we haven't seen LeBron go all bleep you mode, I'm still the best player on the planet. And you know he still has that in him. Like, I don't think anyone would be surprised if Anthony Davis, let's say, didn't play tomorrow and LeBron goes out there and scores 40-something points and closes out this series.
You know, so LeBron brought that type of energy in game 6 against Memphis. It's just that he didn't have to play in the fourth quarter because the Lakers were up by 40. You know, so it's Now, I don't think that's going to happen against Golden State. Like, I do think that, like, if I do think if the Lakers play their A game and they punch first and they limit Draymond and Wiggins to an extent, sure, that, like, they could build a lead like that. But Steph Curry's still over there, and you know he's not laying down. You know that he's going to still hit shots. So I think that they were confident if they brought their that fastball, right, straight up to Memphis, they were confident they were going to be able to build a lead and run out like that. I think that there's an appropriate fear and respect for this Warriors team where, you know, the Lakers, they know that even if they put their foot on the pedal, it's going to take a lot to beat the Warriors. But they should have a certain amount of confidence knowing that their A game so far has been better than anybody else's A game that they've faced so far this postseason.
Mike Trudell, I feel like from a national standpoint, we always talk about LeBron. We always talk about Anthony Davis to an extent, a little bit of Darvin Ham this year just because he's a new head coach and especially with the place that he's becoming a first-time head coach in. But I'll tell you, Rob Pelinka, he's getting some credit now because a lot of people thought this team wasn't capable of going on a run, and the moves that he kind of made towards the deadline have worked out brilliantly for them.
Yeah, so both things are true, right? They were not capable of going on the run with the old roster, and I think going into the season, if for those of us that are cover the team day-to-day, and of course when you're doing it nationally, you got to cover everybody, it's a little bit harder to see that whole picture, but there was always going to be a trade to be made to try and find a better fit in terms of Westbrook alongside LeBron and AD. And guess what? The Lakers had that kind of a fit when they won the title in 1920. They may have repeated or at least gotten back to the finals the next year if AD didn't go down in game four. They were up 2-1 on Phoenix, who of course went on to go to the finals. That team, I called it, Zach, I called it the bubble tax, where they basically they had literally 1.5 months in the offseason to get ready for the next season. And it wasn't just AD that broke down. Caruso was banged up. Kuzma was banged up. KCP was banged up. Like, the whole team of these players that have gone on to have success elsewhere. Like, that team was loaded, and I didn't feel like people quite realized how good they were, even when they won the title in the bubble. So then, after that year, they make the trade for Westbrook, and all of a sudden, you don't have the same type of supportive talent around this LeBron AD ecosystem, and it doesn't go well. Well, once they made those trades, it's not just the one for Westbrook going out, right? It was also Rui Hachimura for some second-round picks along with Kendrick Nunn. Obviously a great trade now that we look back on in hindsight. Like, those moves have just restored the type of surrounding talent that LeBron and AD need, albeit, Zach, a little bit different. Like, the team was bigger, a little bit more rugged in 1920. This year, there's a little more skill. You see not just with Russell out there, but also promoting Austin Reeves into the starting lineup. So, yeah, it's something that Pelinka and his staff, you know, do get the credit for. And that, like, they are now in position, again, a home game to get to the conference finals. They were the 13th seed in the middle of February.
Mike Trudell, what has it been like to see about this breakout story of Austin Reeves and then also the return of D'Angelo Russell to the Lakers?
So Reeves, I think right from the start, and I was lucky enough to go and watch them play in not just Summer League, but the California Classic, which is like the pre-summer Summer League, where it's the Lakers and the Warriors and the Kings, and for whatever reason, the Miami Heat. I think it's because Pat Riley likes to come out to Cali in the summer. And, I mean, it is hot in Florida. Like, we get it. So I go up there and think, okay, wait, I don't watch much college basketball, Zach. I don't know about you. And so I hadn't seen much of Reeves, but the Lakers scouts had told me, hey, this dude's a player. Like, we have him with potential first-round grades. We don't think he's going to go in the first round, and we think that if he can kind of convince folks, maybe don't draft him in those later spots, that he might walk in here knowing that there's going to be an opportunity to play because of what the roster situation was, all the money that was going out to not just LeBron and AD, but Westbrook. So they thought that was going to be an opportunity where he could play. So he comes in the preseason, and literally from game one, LeBron looks over there, and he's like, oh, yeah, this dude knows how to ball. And it's not just what you would think it is with all the skill. Like, he's better defensively than you feel like he should be. He's just a super smart player and a very skilled player. And so he's been an ideal fit. I think the next step for him will be this offseason as he continues to kind of, you know, get stronger and get his body up to that NBA level frame of being able to play 35 minutes night to night to night against the best athletes in the world. But I thought that he's been great the last two games, especially, Zach. So it's a good question by you. And you also asked about D'Lo. You know, that's a very nice redemption story in its own right. He's just a different guy. Like, he was 19 when he was with the Lakers and Kobe was there. You know, and people expected him to be the number two pick, to be great right away. That's a tough ask, right? And he's had his ups and downs in different spots, but the reason that he fits well here is because of the specific skills, just dribbling, passing, shooting. It seems like basic, But that's a better fit next to LeBron and AD than, you know, for example, than the type of player that Russ is or other players like that are more of a hammer, kind of blunt force object. And that's been a nice fit so far for sure.
On the way out with Mike Trudell, I know it's always tough to give the coach credit when LeBron is on the team. It's just the way that this works. But what has Darvin Ham brought to this Lakers team this year?
Yeah, I think that – so the thing that Darvin is great at, and I had an idea of this before he became the head coach, right, because he was an assistant coach on the Mike Brown staff back when I was covering the team, you know, what was that, 10 years ago now, 10, 11 years ago now. And everybody in the NBA likes Darvin, players, coaches, referees. He's just got this force of personality. And that right there, it's not in the way that doesn't bring respect also, though, because part of it is just he's imposing as a figure, but then he's got a real easy and quick laugh. So I think that's one. Like I think that you can either have two things. You can have ultimate X's and O's brain, think of like a Spoelstra or something like that, or you can have this just magnetism about you as a head coach. And I think that the X's and O's have been good too, but those you just need reps like in an actual NBA playoff series. And as the series have gone on, Memphis and now this one, I think that Darvin's chops are showing more and more there. But the thing that was there from the beginning was the personal side of things. And that's, you know, what gets players to buy in. And that's an important value to have to me as an NBA head coach.
Last one for Mike Trudell. You can follow him on Twitter at Lakers Reporter. And I see in one of your profile pictures, it's you interviewing the late, great Kobe Bryant. It's still surreal that we have to talk about Kobe in the past tense. Just all your years covering the team. What was one of your favorite Kobe Bryant memories?
Oh man! So from a personal standpoint, the story that I tell a lot is like Kobe found out that there wasn't anything for us on the traveling party for a Thanksgiving that we happened to be in Detroit, and so he rented out the ballroom of the lobby and basically, you know, catered this full Thanksgiving meal, and there was a ping pong table there, and some of the players were playing. I end up playing with a player named Sean Williams. And, you know, I'm beating Sean, and Sean probably isn't thrilled about it since I'm just a sideline reporter. And so Kobe starts razzing Sean Williams about it, starts talking trash to him, and, oh, yeah, you're going to lose to the reporter, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I said, Kobe, you know, at first I was being facetious, thinking he wouldn't want. I was like, you want some too, Kobe? And he's like, yep. So I'm like, all right, so what did I get myself into here? And it turns out, so Kobe gets up there, and, you know, he's 6'6". He's got the reach. He's got the range. He's got the hand-eye coordination. But I can tell right away that he hadn't played as much ping pong as me. So I actually end up getting him a couple times. But the second game, this is what impressed me about Kobe and sort of was a metaphor for why he was who he was. He literally got better from game one to game two. You know, usually when you just play somebody in anything, pick up, whatever, like go play pool, go play pickup basketball, you kind of just play again. And no, he was studying what I was doing to him. And I was kind of pounding on his backhand. So he adjusted where he was standing, just little stuff like that. And he's talking trash, but more to himself, you know, and not to me, like, you're better than this. And so after I beat him, he was classy about it. He wasn't like mad that he lost to me specifically. He was just mad that he lost. And I heard later that he asked his security guy, basically, how can I get a ping pong table ordered to the house? Because I don't think he was trying to lose to anybody later on. And that's where we get to the first part of what you said. I'm just, you know, will be forever bummed that he never got to kick my ass later on, which certainly would have happened, I'm sure, as he evolved. So that just told me kind of part, even against me in the ping pong, that was Kobe the competitor.
That's just absolutely awesome. Mike Trudell, enjoy game 6 coming up tomorrow night. Appreciate the time as always.
All right, man. Have a good one.